Hi everyone, I'm Mitch Goldich, and if you recognize my voice, it's probably from the MMQB Gambling Podcast, which ran on Fridays during the season. I'm back today in the off-season with the full MMQB crew. Clockwise, in a series of Zoom windows on my laptop, we've got Gary Gramling, Jenny Varentis, Connor Orr, and Albert Breer. Hey everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Mitch.
All right, as you guys know, we weren't going to do a podcast today, but once Blaine Gabbert signed with the Bucks, we said, that's it, emergency podcast time, better get everyone on the phone. No, this is something new, which we've decided to call MMQB Week in Review. We thought it'd be fun to go around and talk about some of the stories we've written for the site this week, and just a nice little forum to discuss our work and check in with each other. But before we get to football, and we will get to football, I promise, I also just thought it'd be fun to sort of go around the horn. These are such crazy times for everybody, and I know we've all been self-quarantining and staying indoors, and people are looking for ways to stay busy and find things to do. So I thought it'd be nice at first to go around and just talk about maybe some TV or movies. Let's kind of see what everyone's watched this week. If anyone wants to just go around, maybe Albert, we can start with you. Something you watched this week and what you thought of it.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cliche on my end. I watched Tiger King, which I think kind of like gave me a real idea of the people that maybe aren't paying attention to the quarantine thing right now. So I watched that, and we started the documentary last night on the NCAA basketball thing. What's it called? I can't even remember the name of it. It was Wetzel and Thamel and all those guys did a bunch of the reporting on it. So, and I've fallen asleep on the couch a bunch because as anybody, and I know a bunch of you guys have kids, know, now we've got them 24/7, which has a way of wearing you out and sending you to sleep on the couch at about 9 p.m.
I haven't seen Tiger King yet. I'm sure I will eventually. But does it live up? Has everyone seen it? Am I the only one who hasn't?
I didn't see it.
I only watched the first episode.
I didn't see it. I haven't seen the Tiger show.
All right. Maybe by next week we'll all have seen it.
Okay.
Gary, give us something you did see.
Oh, I'm running behind because we had a baby last winter, so I'm catching up on like the fall stuff. But what I finished watching this week, which I was super excited about and really excited to get back to, was Undone, which is a series on Amazon Prime. It's and I've mentioned this before on the podcast. I watch Adult Swim like nonstop, and I like the weirdest stuff. I like Tim and Eric and their stuff. So This is done with rotoscoping animation, which is basically they draw over the people, the actors, and they do oil paintings in the background on the show, and it's very nice looking, and it's just a really neat show. It has a plot, but it's sort of science fiction-y. It has to do with sort of bending space-time continuum and the nature of reality and thing like that. It's Rosa Salazar. It's also got Bob Odenkirk, who's like my favorite person in the world. But it was awesome, and it's the people who wrote it are the people who wrote BoJack Horseman for the most part, Raphael, Bob Waxberg, and Kate Purdy. And it's just a really neat show. And everyone, it's 8 episodes, it's 22 minutes, and I would recommend 8 episodes, 22 minutes per episode, so you can do the math on that. And I recommend everyone dive into it.
All right, I'm a huge BoJack fan, so that may have to move to the top of my recommendations list. Jenny, how about you?
Well, I felt a little targeted by this question at first, Mitch, because as many people know, perhaps some of our listeners, I am woefully behind and out of date on most movies and pop culture things. But I did watch a show that I finished. I watched the Hulu Hillary documentary, which was really interesting. I learned a lot. I thought it was a fantastic look, and it also made me a little bit sad, given how qualified she would have been to lead our country at this point in time. But one of the scenes that stuck out was that when she was in high school, she ran for student council president, and she didn't win. And she and her classmates said that there was no way their class was ever going to elect a girl instead of a boy. But once the boy was elected, he had Hillary do all the work. And she did it because she enjoyed it, but it was just kind of a precursor for what was to come in her life.
So you went for a nice escape from our climate and real world. That's right. That was your distraction.
That's right. From that's the right. daily news. I did buy there a puzzle for this upcoming week, so we'll see.
Okay, we'll get an update on the puzzle next week. And Cotter, how about you?
I've pretty much been toggling between the DIY network and the Great American Network, which means like Great American Network has barbecue pitmasters. I watch a lot of barbecue pitmasters, and the DIY network has log cabin living, which after lakefront bargain hunt is more of a summer show, and so in the winter and the colder months they transition to log cabin living, which I really enjoy because I can. It's the perfect show to put on in the background when you're reading something. And at night now, like, I would say, like, as soon as we put our daughter to bed, I've started reading because it helps me, like, sleep a little bit better. So it's a good, like, show to have in the background of trying to read a book. And then so everyone can stay entertained, but also, you know, I can also read the words on the page, too.
Well, and also log cabin living, that's the dream for you, right, Connor? This is just your future life.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's totally what I aspire to be. I would say that, like, I've sort of broken down as a person a little bit. Like, our neighbor had a bunch of trees cut down, and so I just, and they were cut into these big logs, and I was just like, you know what? Throughout the coronavirus, I'm going to chop them all up for you. And so I've just been like chopping wood and like setting fires in my backyard in a fire pit, not like just anywhere. And like just doing really strange, like things that I imagine like, settlers would do. I don't know why, but it helps pass the time. So
dressing the part.
We need exercise, so if you're out there chopping logs, that's more than I'm doing most days.
I haven't cut myself. I'm like, I haven't, what was the Jaguars punter that swung the axe into his shin?
Yeah.
Was it Josh Scobie?
That was the keep chopping thing, right? With that's right, was Del Rio?
Chris Hansen.
Okay.
Yeah. So I haven't done that yet, which is good.
All right, well, as for myself, I will say I watched a movie that I had never seen. I think my wife and I do a good job sort of rotating, like watching something that I've seen and she hasn't, and then something she's seen and I haven't. So I watched one of her favorites, Bring It On, the classic high school cheerleading movie.
Wow.
Which I had never seen it until this week. Finally caught it. Pretty good movie. I guess if I have two gripes. Now, this is going to be the rest of the podcast. At the beginning of the movie, it was not quite believable how good they were. They tell us coming in that this team has won 5 national championships, and obviously they're very good by the end of the movie, but I didn't quite buy it at the start. My other big criticism, you know, there are two rival teams, and they have a couple of face-to-face confrontations. I don't want to spoil things, but there are two sort of big moments in dialogue when one captain says to the other, "Bring it." And it really bothered me that the dialogue line was "bring it," but the movie was called "Bring It On." And it felt like they should have said "Bring It On," or they should have named the movie "Bring It." This is very little to do with the movie as a whole, which was fine, but that was I'm nitpicking. But anyway, so I watched Bring It On.
If I were your wife, I'd be so furious that like if you did you say that during the watching of the movie?
I may have mentioned it a half a dozen times. Yes. Why do you ask?
I'd be like, come on, man. Don't ruin my favorite movie.
I like it. I like the thing that they titled the movie when they were done, so it was all very organic.
Connor, you know, I'm great to watch movies with, as you learned last summer during 100%. Bad football movies. So, let's not
I miss it every day.
All right. Should we get to football here? Should we, as promised, talk about some of our stories this week? I guess, Connor, I think I came to you last there. Should I go to you first? This time you wrote a fun one about some NFL super fans who, we don't know. The future is very uncertain whether we'll have football and whether we'll have fans there. So I thought this was a fun idea for a story. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So Jenny and I talked a little bit about this on the Weekside podcast, that the NFL is sort of, you know, barreling ahead with this idea that they're going to have a full 16-game season, that everything's going to start on time. And I think what they're missing is this thing where, you know, a lot of their fans are feverish and rabid. And, you know, in every city, there's these people whose entire life and identity revolves around being at these games and being recognized and being on the Jumbotron. And what happens if, you know, the thing that is supposed to signal an end of coronavirus for them is taken away, or that they need to be kicked out in order for it to continue? And I think that a lot of people aren't thinking about the people who are listening to the NFL and believing the NFL and thinking that everything's going to be fine, when in reality, you know, the NFL is kind of dangling this carrot for everyone. And then what happens when they say, oh yeah, by the way, you can't go to any of these games, you can't see your friends at the tailgate, you can't, you know, whatever, take pictures with fans in the parking lot if you're Falcon Bird Lady, you know? I just think it's an interesting deal where, I don't know. I don't think there's any way that this season goes off normally on time. Who's going to want to shove themselves into a stadium with 60,000 people within like spittle distance, you know, in September? I mean, that's like a couple months from now. That's I don't think we're going to have all this cleaned up by then. At least I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah. Was there one thing, I know you talked to them about their feelings about the season and what it would be like, but was there one thing maybe you learned about maybe name all three of the superfans you talked to, and then is there one thing that you just found amazing that you never knew that you learned from those conversations?
Definitely. So we talked to Bird Lady, who is the Falcons superfan, and she lives in the Nest. And her life has been seriously impacted by COVID-19. She lost two cousins to COVID-19. Her sister, her sister's father, and six other cousins are currently tested positive for COVID-19. So our thoughts are definitely with Bird Lady and her family. But so we talked to Bird Lady. We talked to Pumpkinhead in Cleveland, who is the man that wears a pumpkin on his head. We talked to License Plate Guy in New York, who, if you've seen games, he's the one with a giant string of license plates around his neck that sits behind the home bench. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, how deep some of this runs. Like, License Plate Guy has been to every single game since 2000, so this would have been his 20th year of going to every single game. And he has never seen a Giants home game on television in his life. And he's, I think, in his late 40s or early 50s, which is pretty crazy if you think about it. I mean, that's a long way to go to have been to every single Giants game, home game at least, since you've become a sentient human being. That's pretty serious devotion.
Yeah, so you're talking about you know, the likelihood that either the season basically won't kick off as expected, and that there can definitely be some kind of a disruption, and we're still waiting to see what that looks like. And I think that ties into something Jenny wrote on Tuesday, because the league had a conference call. They had a couple of conference calls to make some decisions about the future of the league. And then Jenny, I know you wrote on Tuesday after they talked to the media about some of the things that were decided. And you wrote about how optimistic they are. I know this is a topic that Albert wrote about this week too, but Jenny, do you want to talk us through your piece and what you wrote about?
Yeah, the league had a media call after 2 days of conference calls with the team presidents and the owners. And it was pretty clear they wanted to get the message out that they're planning on a full 2020 season that starts on time, that includes 16 games and the playoffs. They are not planning for any other options. There have been no conversations. Jeff Pasch, who's the league's general counsel, went so far to say they really wanted to get that message out. There was the takeaway. There was a moment in the call when Troy Vincent, who's the EVP of football operations, referenced contingency plans and maybe communicating with clubs about those. And a PR representative jumped in and immediately flipped the conversation back to Pasch, who said, we didn't talk about any contingency plans essentially on our two calls today. We're fully focused on this one scenario. And I understand that perhaps it's easier to schedule things as if they were going ahead, and then if you have to make changes, do that later. But I think what stood out was kind of the defiance and the tone, that it was silly that they would even consider the alternative. And they went so far as to say, you know, we'll have international games and We'll be playing in all of our regular stadiums, even though two are currently under construction. And there have been people at work sites in the Los Angeles work site who have tested positive for coronavirus. So I think there's just so many factors at play here, and it's difficult to project out. And I think the message was intended for sponsors, advertisers, for the business world to say, hey, the NFL's forging ahead. From, I think, a lot of Americans' perspective, kind of like, how can you know that at this point? How can really know at what anything will look like a couple days, weeks, months from now?
Yeah, and Albert, I know you wrote similarly about this and their tone. Do you want to hop in? It sounds like I think you felt similarly to Jenny.
No, I did. And I don't think the problem isn't, to me, like, and I think Jenny just sort of encapsulated this. The problem isn't that you're saying you're planning for the season to begin. Of course you're planning for the season to begin, because it might begin on time. It's not impossible that that happens. The problem is that you're saying, and A, I think it's a lie. Like, I think they do have contingency plans, but you're trying to project strength, right? Like, so they're trying to project this strength to their sponsors, to their advertisers, to their partners, and saying, well, like, look, football's going to be back, and you should continue to invest your money with us at a time when everybody's going to be pulling back your spending, because we're going to be here for you. And when we come back, the public's going to be locked in on us. And I understand sending that message. You know, the problem is you're sending that message as sort of a zero-sum thing, where it's not just we're planning on the season beginning, it's we're not planning on anything else happening. And I just think it's a dangerous message. You know, it's just, to me, it's there are people that are listening to them and saying, and people who want to believe, and I don't blame anybody for wanting to be optimistic, but people who want to believe, like, this is going to be okay. You know, we can't treat this as if it's going to be over in July or August or September, because if we act that way, it won't be over then. You know, so you're sending this message that there's this end date on what's going on in this country. And I don't want to turn this into a coronavirus podcast, but you're sending this message that there's this end date on coronavirus, and that we're going to be out of the woods no matter what in 3 or 4 months. Well, if the public's getting that message, I think that's a really bad thing, because if we're treating it like that, we're not going to be out of the woods in September or October. And so, to me, that was the problem with it. It wasn't saying we're planning for a season. Of course they're planning for a season. They have to plan for a season. It was more so we're planning for a season and nothing else. And we 100% believe this is going to happen. And I think, Jenny, jump in here, but I think they even said we're planning on this with fans in the stands. I think Jeff Pasch actually specifically said that, which just adds another layer to it.
Yeah, he specifically said, with fans in the stands in our regular stadiums. So there wouldn't even be an option for playing without fans or playing in a different location, which I don't know that those make a lot of sense anyway. I think the number of people that have to be in a stadium to make an NFL game go is large enough that you have to make sure that there's safety in any kind of gathering. But yes, it was all of the criteria as it always is. And the international games was striking to me too, you know, making plans to go to other countries when we're trying to still just get a handle on containment in the United States, you know? So it's just a lot of factors at play that they can't really have a full grasp on at this point.
While MLB literally just yesterday announced their international games are canceled this season, they're going to stay in the U.S. Obviously, that's sooner than the NFL season, which is farther down the line. But still, I think every sports league is kind of watching every other league and seeing the steps that they're taking. And it's like, okay, we canceled something in May. Okay, they canceled something in June. Well, now, you know, the British Open in July. And it's sort of like the calendar. You just keep going, and they're all, I don't know if it's playing a game of chicken, but they're just waiting and watching things get pushed and pushed a little bit farther out. And plus, we just don't know even mentally if they are allowed to have fans in stands, if anyone would actually, how many people would feel comfortable buying a ticket and going and sitting there. And even, you know, so many people are losing their jobs, and we don't know if people are going to have money or if they're going to want to spend their money on tickets, an expensive day to go to a football game. So, you know, it like you said, Albert, we don't have to make the whole podcast about coronavirus, but it's just, it's hard to talk about anything else. Yeah. And it's just, there are so many unknowns that it's impossible to know what things are going to be like.
I think the one thing that I sort of wished I touched on that I didn't, that I thought about afterwards was, you know, at the end of the CBA negotiation, and again, Jenny was there on the ground in Indianapolis with me, One of the big reasons why the league was so, you know, just sort of forceful and like, we have to do it now, was because they wanted to move to the broadcast deals. And that was really kind of the golden goose for the NFL owners. There were actually owners that privately said the CBA is small potatoes, you know, when compared to the broadcast deals that we're going to be negotiating after this. And so I do wonder if maybe part of this from on Pash's part, and, you know, and part of being so forceful on that conference call was maybe this, maybe this uneasiness that they feel right now over what could happen to the broadcast deals and how the networks might be able, might be like kind of hamstrung on how they bid now on some of the TV deals, because that's where the real money is, right? And so I was sort of wondering about that. If the economy takes a huge hit from what's going, you know, takes the hit that a lot of people are projecting here, what does that mean for the network's ability to bid on the broadcast deals? So there could be a ton of money at stake here for owners, which I think would bring even more context to why they were so forceful with their message.
I also think who delivered the message was notable. Jeff Pash does talk, but he's not often the most, you know, person who's out in front the most. But I think it was intentional that they had their general counsel be the lead voice on a conference call at this point in time.
Yeah, no question. No question. I mean, it's putting a lawyer in charge of something that has to be very, very buttoned up. You know, that's the easiest way to put it.
All right, well, Albert, while we're on you, I know everyone's also trying to figure out what impact this is going to have on teams and players and prospects and all kinds of things. And I thought you had a really interesting story in your game plan this week, talking to Dan Quinn, the Falcons head coach, just about what their preparation has been like and the conversations they have with prospects over FaceTime and things he's doing when they talk to their staff. Can you tell us a little bit about your game plan column and the Falcons prep?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a lot like, I think, you know, what he's doing is probably what a lot of teams are doing, which is, you know, similar to what happened in 2011, where teams are looking at the circumstances and saying, okay, how can we create an advantage for ourselves here? Because when the season starts, if it starts, you know, everybody's going to have attacked this a little bit differently. And so it was interesting hearing him talk about how, you know, some of the things that he might get in a private workout or a 30 visit, he's trying to replace in the FaceTime calls. And the one thing that he brought up was him and Thomas Dimitroff, the general manager down there in Atlanta, what they look for is like energy, enthusiasm, and passion for football in the workouts. And so, you know, he said to me, he's like, on Tuesday night, we went 3 for 3, you know, and we had 3 interviews and we saw it in all 3 of those guys. And that's great. And so there was that part of it that I thought was really interesting. I thought the other part that was interesting, too, was how he's leaning on other people to try to help him through this. And I think you probably, if you dug enough, I think you'd see a lot of this in the sports community in general, where he talked to the Clippers guys, Lawrence Frank and Doc Rivers, about how they handled it, because they're obviously in a very different situation where they were in season when this happened. And, you know, he went and talked to the Duke lacrosse team because they called him in to help some of the guys on that team handle what was going on, because he was at Hofstra when John Donofsky, the lacrosse coach at Duke, they were Hofstra together. And then he even brought in, you know, I guess his college roommate is a college professor, and he actually brought him in to talk about teaching online classes because he thought there was some application for what, you know, a college professor would try to get across in an online class to what he and his coaches are going to have to do over the next 3 or 4 months with their players, where they may be going through teaching sessions, virtual workouts through, you know, Zoom or Microsoft Team or whatever it is. And so I thought it was interesting how he's just, you know, they're looking to pull every lever they possibly can. And I'd be interested to see just globally how much this is happening in the sports community in general, where you have maybe a baseball manager calling a basketball coach, or a basketball coach calling a football coach, or a football coach calling a hockey, whatever it is. I just thought it was interesting how like everybody's sort of in this unprecedented situation and they're all kind of trying to pull on each other to find answers.
I'll tell you the number one thing I was thinking about reading your column, Albert. Dan Quinn was on the hot seat. Everyone thought he was going to get fired when the Falcons got off to a bad start. Saved his job with their great turnaround in the second half of the season. And I have to imagine, if you're the Falcons owner or GM or whoever, you've got to be so happy to still have him in there. We're talking about how teams with continuity at head coaches and quarterbacks and other important positions have such a leg up. and just him having been there for years and having that institutional knowledge, instead of having a rookie, maybe a first-time head coach starting totally over and being thrown into these circumstances. As a fan of the Falcons, or if I was running the Falcons, I would just feel so much better knowing I've got Dan Quinn there. And that was just, that's the first thing that stood out to me.
Well, I mean, think about this, Mitch, too. Like, if you're Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland, or Joe Judge in New York, or Matt Rhule in Carolina, or Mike McCarthy in Dallas, or Ron Rivera in Washington, I mean, your first real exposure to the team in general was going to be in 2 weeks. So, you know, your first exposure to a lot of the guys who are going to be playing for you is going to be over the same sort of, you know, the same sort of technology that we're using right now, through a Zoom meeting, through a Microsoft Team, you know, app, whatever it is. Like, they're going to be using this sort of technology to get to know each other. And I thought one thing that was interesting about what Quinn said, I brought up something that Jordan Palmer said to me on his on my podcast earlier in the week. And he said that in the 11 lockout, he had used this because he was the only quarterback on the Bengals roster at the time. His brother had actually just retired and demanded a trade, and Andy Dalton wasn't on the team yet. And so he used it to get to know guys on defense on the team and to try to build himself up as a leader. He's passed that on to Josh Allen and Sam Darnold, who he's working with in California. Now Darnold and Allen are doing that for themselves in Buffalo, New York. Well, you know, I mentioned that to Quinn, and he's like, yeah. He's like, the interesting thing about it is we're building stronger relationships now because you have to work harder to get to people. So that's the flip side of it. You don't get the face-to-face interaction, but when you're reaching out to guys, it's like it takes effort to do that. And so, like, the feeling on his end was we're building stronger bonds because we have to go the extra mile to get in touch with people.
All right, Gary, on to you. Position U is all over our website right now. And I know you didn't write these, but I know you had a hand in helping these get together. Can you tell us a little bit about Position U, which is a series that you've helped edit and help us roll out on the site this week?
Yeah, we finally get some hard news here, which I'm happy about. So yeah, Position U, we basically, so Reed Foster, who is a former researcher of the show that Andy Benoit and I do, we got together and sort of in our spreadsheet geekdom, took the last 10 drafts, so the last decade of drafts, and decided, based on drafts, because frankly, when it comes to college programs, what should you be measured by? It's how you prepare for your players for their professional careers. So based on where guys were drafted, how many guys they put in the league, we did include undrafted players, what those players did as far as accomplishments, games started, All-Pro berths, or All-Pro honors, MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, stuff like that. And we came up with a sort of scoring system to measure at each of the, we did eight positions, quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end, offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, defensive back. And we came up with who has the right, what programs have the right to brand themselves, the modern Position U for each of those positions. And it was also kind of sparked a little bit, you know, Penn State people are always talking about Penn State as linebacker U. And as you all know, Jenny Vrentis is a Penn State alum. And
really
this is
glad
really,
to get the shout out.
This was really a chance to cut Jenny down to size a little bit, because it's been a long time since Penn State put linebackers in the NFL. But we ran through it, and the thing that most it kind of surprised me was there weren't a lot of close races. We thought we were going to have a lot of like coin flip stuff, and as we were kind of settling on scoring systems, we were like, all right, let's make sure if we use this variation that we're still getting a similar result and stuff like that. And for every position except for offensive line, it was basically static all the way through. Offensive line, depending on how we tweaked the scoring, it was either Notre Dame or Wisconsin. We ended up awarding it to Notre Dame. But yeah, other than that, it was, I mean, had a lot of Alabama. They won three of the eight. But other than that, it was, you know, a lot of diversity among schools, but no sort of coin flips. And I should mention just one more time, I don't know why this popped in my head, but Ohio State didn't win any of these.
It really hurt. Your scoring system must be a mess. I mean, it's just a total disaster of a scoring system. You got to look at that again.
You know what the beauty of this is? I'm a Syracuse grad. I'm not really into Syracuse football. I grew up right near UConn. I'm more, you know, if you can be a UConn football guy. I'm a UConn football guy, but no one's a UConn football guy, so no one can offend me on this. And UConn, by the way, that is Gunner U, between like Marcus Easley and Jeremy Davis. A lot of good Gunners coming out of the Huskies program.
Very specific.
Yeah, wow.
Very specific. A specific.
More than Lehigh can say, so you should let him have it.
Lehigh's mascot U.
Yes,
absolutely.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're very proud of our Lehigh mascot alumni throughout the sports world. All right, so I think that's it. I hit everybody once, so everyone can make sure they go to themmqb.com and check out all of our stories. There's more there than we've even talked about. But before we go, this was actually Jenny's idea, so I'm going to let her go first. We thought it would be nice. You know, it's been a tough time for a lot of people. I know everyone's been personally affected, and just watching the news, it's been a lot. So, Jenny, you thought it would be nice to just sort of go around the horn and have everyone basically say one good thing that happened to them this week. Was that the idea?
Yeah.
Or just one good thing in general in the world, or specific to us? I guess people can take it however they want.
Yeah, take it however they want. Maybe bring some cheer. My good thing is that on Tuesday morning, my neighbor slid a note under my door asking if I needed anything, and she gave me her cell phone number. Because, you know, in New York, you don't often interact that much with your neighbors. But I texted her, said I was okay, and she said she was making some chicken soup. So later in the day, she put a container of homemade chicken soup, which was delicious, outside of my door. It was chicken and rice soup, and best chicken soup I've had, and it was a really nice gesture. So
awesome. I love that. Connor, I haven't heard from you in a little bit. Do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. I would say that the best thing during this time has just been, you know, you think about FaceTime and, you know, how horrified we were initially when all of our relatives wanted to talk to the baby when they were born, and you worried about sticking a cell phone that close to their face. But now, like, how lucky we are to at least have something where we can, you know, share moments and stuff like that. And we talk to my parents, my wife's parents, grandmothers, grandfathers every day, you know, and just the ability to still be able to do that. You know, I think it's put an emphasis on, you know, how much everybody really likes each other, you know, and how lucky we all are to have each other. So I think it's a good thing to, you know, do the little like emotional reset. You know, everything gets crazy, but at the end of the day, it's like, okay, you know, I do like you people. So.
All right, Albert, how about you?
Yeah, I'd echo what Connor said. I mean, the cool thing is for me is that I've gotten to spend more time with my kids than I normally would. And so, I'm trying to take them out for a walk every day, just to get them outside and get them fresh air and everything else. And so I think you get to do a lot of cool stuff. And like Connor said, it's just, you know, I'm probably not great about staying in touch with people. And sometimes, you know, I'll go a little while without talking to my parents. And I've been talking to them pretty consistently. And my dad's birthday is tomorrow, so we're going to do a Zoom dinner. Me and my brother are going to do a Zoom dinner with my dad and my mom tomorrow. So everybody's being creative. But I think, you know, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. When you got to make the extra effort to do it, I think it means a little bit more. And I actually, you know, the one thing that was sort of cool for me is, you know, getting to communicate with my uncle over in Austria. And the rules there are, you know, a lot stricter than they are here right now. Obviously, Austria is right next to Italy and right next to Germany. And so they've been in it for a little longer than us. And they can't leave their houses right now without a reason. They've got to wear masks when they leave their houses. And so it's a different situation over there, but it's helped, you know, me as far as, you know, how I'm approaching this, you know, getting to hear some of those stories. So I'm with Connor. I think just being able to kind of, you know, take the time to be around family, whether it's my uncle in Vienna or my kids down the hall, has been really, really great.
All right, Gary, how about you?
If I can, I just want to tell a quick story of my journalistic failings. Early on in the quarantine, I have like a list of stories I want to chip away at. And one thing I've been curious about, there's a story a couple years ago, a lot of airlines dropped their deals with NFL teams. And you know, obviously, they still have to fly places. So I was kind of like, oh, how do they solve this thing? So I'd been looking around. I was like, yo, who's flying teams around now? And I found this little airline who said they flew a handful of teams. So I, you know, I emailed the guy. I was like, hey, you know, just curious about this. You ever want to talk? Here's my number, or shoot me an email or whatever. like 10 days went by, and he finally got back to me, and he's like, hey, Gary, thanks for reaching out. Actually, this is a virtual airline, which means it's not a real airline. It's a game that he's like, a lot of pilots like me play this. You sort of manage your own airport and your fleet of aircraft and your pilots and it is essentially the person I reach out to, and he was super nice and didn't make me feel really, really dumb about it, but it was kind of the equivalent of being like, oh, who is that general manager who traded Randy Moss to the Patriots? And then, like, Googling it, and then, like, finding someone who traded him in a fantasy league and, like, asking him, like, why did you trade Randy Moss? And and them having to be like, no, it's fantasy football. But, yeah, I kind of laughed at myself a little bit there and then, you know, shook it off and moved on with my journalism career.
There you go. So that was your best thing of the week, was a reality check.
Yes. Yeah.
Mitch, can I say that I think one of the best things of the week for you has been this facial hair is phenomenal. Like it,
my beard growth. It, oh, thank you
it,
very much.
It really,
you know, I compliment.
It frames your face well. Yeah.
Coming from Connor. Yeah. You know, I couldn't say that about myself, but I appreciate hearing that from you. If you want to call my beard the highlight of your week, I guess you hadn't seen it until just now. This has been a big thing. I'm enjoying all the stories people are writing about Zoom etiquette and the, like, you know, do this, don't do that, the 10 types of Zoom people you might be and everything. And a lot of the SI meetings we've had have been screens off. And I know some of my friends are posting pictures where their whole office is screens on. And a lot of people at SI have just been screens off the whole time. And this might be the first time that I actually went screen on with coworkers while we were doing this this podcast. So not many people have seen this beard, but yeah, I'm proud of it. We'll see how long it goes for.
So you're the type of Zoom person who has the like dog meme in the background.
Yeah, I have the virtual background of the This Is Fine going on right now. I will say my good thing, and this is maybe a little cliche and probably similar to Connor and Albert, but yeah, with the FaceTiming and Zoom and Google Hangout and everything, it's been nice talking to family and connecting with people that I talk to a lot. But I've also found myself talking to people I don't talk to as often, which has been really nice. Like just yesterday, I was on a Zoom Hangout with a bunch of my college friends, and somebody just started a mass text in the morning with 14 of us. And it was five or six guys who I talk to frequently, and we text a lot and FaceTime and whatever. But then it was just opened up to this much bigger group, and there were 14 of us and some friends who I hadn't talked to in a while. And it was just really nice to check in and see everybody and catch up, not just with my best friends who I'm more in touch with, but a wider group. And we were talking, and one guy has a birthday next Thursday. So we said, okay, let's do this again next Thursday on his birthday. And it's just been nice, not just family and parents and relatives, but I've found myself catching up, even just text messages, checking in with people who I don't talk to as often. It's been nice to, you know, since we have sort of this extra time cooped up at home, to just kind of check in and be in touch with more people. So I've enjoyed that. All right. I think that is going to do it for this week's podcast, unless anyone has anything else they'd like to share.
That was great, Mitch. Thanks for like leading.
No. Yeah, you did, Mitch. You awesome. Did incredible.
Great point, Gary. Oh, wow.
It's a team effort here. All right. Thanks, everybody, for hopping on. This was fun. I feel like we will hopefully do this again next week. This has been, what did we call it? The MMQB Week in Review. That's what we called it until we come up with something else. I think that name might stick, though. I kind of like it. It's snap. We've got the Week Side Pod and the Week in Review.
Oh, yeah.
Two different kinds of week.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's
just stay in your lane.
It's just kind of a thing that happened. Oh, just, sorry. Wow. I'm not. The number one rule of the Week Side Pod is I'm not allowed to talk about the Week Side Pod. All right. Thanks, everybody who listened. Hopefully you enjoyed this. And again, make sure you follow the MMQB on Twitter and check out the MMQB.com. You can follow all of us. You can make sure you get all of our stories every week. And we'll talk to you again soon.